One of the things that we find in our life is we enjoy reading about different people and different places. The Bible is one of those books that deals primarily with people and their lives. When we look at the Bible, we can look at the way that people did things, the way they acted or reacted to certain situations, and we can see what was pleasing to God and what was not pleasing to God. It's interesting when you think about it, God created everything that there is. Not only did He create this globe, the trees, the grass, the sun, the moon, the stars, He created all of the animals, the fish, the birds, and all of the other animals that we have on this planet. Yet, the only part of His creation that He gave the ability to reason things out and to make choices was mankind. When you look in Deuteronomy and you go there to chapter 11 at verses 26 through 28, you read these words. Moses, in talking to the children of Israel, says, "See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, which I am commanding you today, and the curse, if you do not listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I am commanding you today by following other gods which you have not known." Moses said that I am setting before you blessings and curses. God had told Moses that the people would be blessed, and Moses told the people. And God had told them that if they didn't do what He said, that they would be cursed. And Moses told the people this also. If we decide to turn our back on God and do as we please, that is our choice. If we decide to follow God and do what God asks us to do, that is our choice. But understand, both have consequences. Whether they be good or whether they be bad, both have consequences. We want to spend a little bit of time tonight looking at some people throughout the Bible that had to make choices as to what they were going to do. One of those was Noah. Noah chose to be obedient to God. When we look at the world in Noah's day, we talk about how bad the world is today. And we talk about how things have really changed over the years and how nobody respects God or anything else in these days. However, evidently, in the time of Noah, it was even worse than it is today. When you go back into Genesis, and you look at Genesis chapter 5, or chapter 6 rather, at verse 5, says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that He had made man on the earth, and He was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. And then it continues on talking about the generations of Noah, but I want you to notice verse 9, after it talks about the genealogy, he says, Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. We could go other places and look, verses 13 and 14, verse 22, all of these essentially tell us the same thing. Noah was a man who chose to listen to God. He was the only one who chose to listen to God, apparently. And because of his choice, Noah was able to save himself and to save his family. The Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 11 at verse 7 says, by faith Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Now I don't know, and I cannot tell you for absolute certainty everything that went on in that 120 years that it took Noah to prepare the ark. But I can tell you from reading the text that many of the people that were there ridiculed Noah for his choice. They made fun of him. They thought he was absolutely out of his mind. There are some, and they may be right, I don't know. They may be wrong, I don't know. But there are some who claim that at this particular time, as Noah was building this ark, that there had never been anything like rain seen on the earth. Therefore, he's building this great big boat out in the middle of nowhere for what? And they couldn't understand it. But Noah continued and Noah persisted in what he was doing. And in the end result, he saved his family from destruction. We find that because of Noah's action, he is recorded for us as an example for us to choose obedience to God's will that we might be saved. He assured his place in Hebrews chapter 11, what we call the Hall of Fame or the Hall of Faith. But he's used in other places as an example also. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, Peter is talking about this very event. And he says, who once were disobedient, when the patience of God kept waiting in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through the water. He was an example of being saved by water. Noah floated on the water. Noah wasn't under the water. He floated on the water. But water was his salvation. No, it wasn't. Obedience to God was his salvation. Water was the means that God used. He continues his passage there in 1 Peter. And Peter says, corresponding to that, baptism now saves you. Not the removal of the dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Noah was saved because Noah believed God and Noah did what God asked him to do. Baptism today doesn't have any special magical powers, but it saves because it demonstrates the person believes God and is willing to do what God has asked them to do. Noah had a choice to make. He could either follow the world or he could follow God. One led to salvation, one led to destruction. But Noah's not the only one that had choices to make. When God called Abraham to leave Ur of the Chaldees, he was asking Abraham to leave everything that he had known, to get up and go. And he had a choice that he could make. He could go or he could stay. Now, when God went to Abraham, if you go back to Genesis chapter 12, and you look at the passages through there, God doesn't say, Abraham, get up and go down here to this place. He says, starting at verse 1, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in all the families of the earth will and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Now, I want to look for just a minute at verse 1. He says, Abraham, get up and leave. Leave your relatives. Leave your father's house. And go off down here someplace that I'm going to show you along the way. Now, I want you to think about something for just a moment. If somebody, some close friend, someone you trusted, okay, said, I want you to take off and I'll tell you where you're going after you get started. I saw somebody laugh. I saw more than one somebody laugh. Would you do it? I suspect, if you're honest, you'll say the answer is no. But that's what God asked Abraham to do. Get up and go. Well, God, where am I going? Don't worry about it, just go. I'll show you later. We know from verse 4 of chapter 12 of Genesis, Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. But Abraham did what God asked him to do. It was Abraham's determination that he was going to be faithful to God, which led him to make this choice. He had a choice to make. Which way are we going to go? Am I going to do what I think is the safe thing? Or am I going to do what God asks me to do? The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8 through 10, by faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. He did so by faith. He trusted God enough to understand that God would direct him to where he needed to go. The Hebrew writer keeps on and says, by faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which had has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Abraham I don't know how he came to believe God. The text doesn't tell us. But it tells us that he did. And it tells us that God laid a choice before him. And Abraham had to choose which direction he was going to go. When we look at Abraham and his life, we find that it was an example to us of a faith which manifested intense loyalty to God's will. And it stands as an example for us to do the very same. The writer James, in James chapter 2, verses 22 through 20, or 21 through 24, says, "Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son on the altar? You see that faith was working with his works, and as a result of the works, faith was perfected. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. Isn't it interesting in the text that as we looked at Noah, it said Noah walked with God. And as we look at the text, it says that Abraham was called a friend or the friend of God. Why? Because they made a choice to follow God. There are others as we go down through the Bible that we look at. Joseph. Can you imagine this young man? Joseph was about 17 when he was sold into Egyptian slavery. He had all kinds of difficulties. His brothers didn't like him. In fact, most of them wanted to kill him. Reuben saved his life, but he still wound up in Egypt. Now, think about something for just a minute before I continue on with my notes here. Here's a young man, like I said, about 17 when all of this happened to him. Knowing teenagers, I can imagine that it would have been very easy for Joseph to become extremely bitter toward his family. That he would want to do whatever he could to get even. I can see Joseph in Egypt being rebellious and not doing what his master required of him. Because I don't want to be here. It wasn't my choice. And yet, Joseph made the decision to maintain his purity. When Potiphar's wife came to Joseph and tried to entice him into her bed, he said no, because it was the right thing to do. She tried more than once to do this, and he always refused. It caused Joseph to wind up being thrown in prison. And by the way, the prisons in Joseph's day weren't air-conditioned, and they didn't have color TV. But he still maintained his purity. Joseph isn't mentioned in the New Testament like Noah and Abraham and some of the others that we talk about. But his account is preserved for us in the Old Testament. In Romans chapter 15 at verse 4, it tells us that the Old Testament has been preserved for us that we might learn to have patience. In fact, it says, "For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope." It was left that we might learn patience, and that we might learn how to remain pure. Joseph's choice reminds us of what we need to do in the midst of an evil and corrupt world. Paul wrote in the Corinthian letter and said, "Flee immortality. Every other sin that a man commits is outside the body, but immoral man sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are not your own? For you have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body." He says, flee immorality. Run away from it as fast as you can. A little later on, he makes a statement in there about bad company corrupts good morals. You can't run with the dogs without getting fleas. Oh, you hear people all the time making the statement, "Well, just because they do it doesn't mean I have to." That statement has been proven wrong so many times over the centuries. Joseph knew what would happen if he went into Potiphar's wife. Joseph knew what would happen if he turned his back on God. Joseph reminds us that we must live a moral and pure life in an evil world. But there are others that I want to look at tonight also. Moses. Here's a man who was born, and then, because of the time that he was born and the place that he was born, his mother was not allowed to keep him. He was raised in an Egyptian's home. As time progressed, he went to check on his relatives and was rejected by them. He left. He went up into the mountains. He found a man up there by the name Don't get old, folks. That's terrible when that happens. And I can see his name just plain as day, and I can't put it in my mouth. Anyway, his father-in-law, how's that? Jethro. There you go. For 40 years, Moses stayed with Jethro out there and tended sheep. It would probably have been easy because of the way things turned out for Moses not to have cared about the Israelites. But we see that he chose to be meek and chose to do what God ask him to do. If you turn over to Numbers, and you look there in chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says, then Miriam and Aaron, you know who Miriam and Aaron are? Moses' brother and sister. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. God chose Moses to come back from his self-imposed isolation in the mountains and to lead the nation of Israel out of Egyptian bondage. It would have been quite easy, I believe, for Moses to have said, hey, God chose me to do this. It's not your decision. I'm the one that makes the decision. But he didn't do that. He was humble. His humility gives us an example of how Jesus wants us to be. In the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 5, we call them the Beatitudes. In verse 5, blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Jesus doesn't want us to be argumentative. Jesus doesn't want us to be proud, haughty, whatever word you'd like to put in there. He wants us to be meek. How did Moses develop this meekness? The same way that we do. By choosing to submit to God. He made the choice. In Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 through 27. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Yeah, by the way, folks, the pleasure never lasts. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. Have you noticed something? And we're going to look at a couple more here in a moment. Have you noticed something about this when the Hebrew writer talks about these men? By faith, Noah built the ark. By faith, Abraham left Ur of the Chaldees. By faith, Moses, by faith. Folks, what is faith? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago in a sermon. But what is faith? When you put it down very simply, faith is trust. Do you trust that person? Do you have faith that they will do what they said they would do? Do you trust them to do what they said they would do? When you boil it down, it is trust. These men all trusted God to do what he said he would do. And thusly, they made the choice to follow him. Solomon is an interesting character also. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on him, but he's an interesting character. When he became king, he was quite young, and God came to him and said, Solomon, I'll give you anything that you ask for. Just tell me what it is, fame, fortune, whatever you want. You just tell me, and I'll give it to you. Solomon could have chosen the riches of the world. Solomon could have chosen to be the most well-known person in the world. But Solomon didn't choose any of that. Solomon chose wisdom. He said, I'm not smart enough to do this. If you turn over to 1 Kings for just a moment, and you look there in chapter 3, at verse 4, the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night, and God said, ask what you wish me to give you. Then Solomon said, you have shown great loving kindness to your servant David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have reserved for him this great loving kindness that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. Yet I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? He could have chosen anything that he wanted, but he chose wisdom. He chose understanding. The idea that he would be able to rule wisely and to make wise decisions. But understand, even with this choice of wisdom, it did not keep Solomon from making his mistakes. But in his search for meaning in life, he still reached the proper conclusion about life. When you turn over to Ecclesiastes, and you look there, in chapter 2, verses 2 through 9, the writer says this, I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. He made a bunch of mistakes, didn't he? Bunch of them. He says, my wisdom also stood by me. Now, jump over to chapter 12 for just a moment. You see what Solomon was doing? Solomon, after God had given him all of this wisdom, turned his back on God and lived for himself. And yet, when you get over to chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, you look at verses 13 and 14. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Solomon turned his back on God, but eventually Solomon realized what had happened and turned it around. Solomon made his choice, and he saw the results of that choice by turning his back on God. And then he made another choice, to fear God. We have an example also in the New Testament. That example is a fellow by the name of Saul, or Paul, whichever you would prefer to call him. He had some choices to make. If you turn to Acts and you turn over to chapter 7, you find there a fellow by the name of Stephen. Stephen winds up being stoned to death. And it tells us that there was a young man there who held the coats of those who were throwing the stones. This young man's name was Saul. It also tells us, as you go over into chapter 9, that, oh, by the way, I said chapter 7, which is where you find Stephen. Chapter 8 is where you find out about Saul. If you go over into chapter 9, you find that Saul had left Jerusalem. He was on his way to Damascus. He was going to destroy the Christians that were in Damascus. That was his sole purpose. The Lord appeared to him on the road and talked to him. Sent him on into Damascus and said, you'll find out what you need to know when you get there. Paul has a choice to make. Saul has a choice to make. I can go ahead and carry out the commission that the chief priest has given me, or I can listen to this voice that I heard. If you go over to Philippians chapter 3 and you look there, verses 4 through 11, you find out what he did with this choice. Philippians chapter 3, verses 4 through 11. Although I myself might have confidence even in the flesh, if anyone else has a mind to put confidence in the flesh, I far more, circumcised the eighth day of the nation of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness which is in the law, found blameless. But whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ. And he continues on down through there, all the way down through verse 11, talking about these things. He says, more than that, I count all things to be lost in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish, so that I may gain Christ and may be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own derived from the law, but that which is through faith. There's that word again. Through faith in Christ, the righteousness which comes from God on the basis of faith, that I may know Him and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of His suffering, being conformed to His death, in order that I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. He knew that it was better to leave the path he had been walking and devote his life to the service of Christ than it was to continue to walk that path. And he continued to do so. If you look at verses 12, 13, and 14. Why did he do so? He understood, and we need to understand, that God will always reward such a choice. He may not reward that choice in this life, but then he will reward it in eternity. In 2 Timothy, passage that I think is really, really special, chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. Paul says, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come." He says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." He understood that God would reward him. He suffered in this life. He suffered more than most of us would ever imagine. But he knew that God would reward him for his choices. What about others? We could talk about David. We could talk about John the Baptist. We could talk about the courage that Peter showed, the love that the Apostle John had. We could talk about the encouraging words that Barnabas gave the saints. We could talk about all of these people and more and still not cover the subject. They were all people just like you and me who chose to commit their life to God. God has given us the information that we need so that we can learn from their examples how to please Him. The question is, what choice will you make? What will you do with the choice that God gives you? God has said, "Do what I say and receive a blessing. Turn your back on me and receive a curse." Which would you rather have? If you've never obeyed the gospel, you need to do so, because that applies to you as well as it applies to anyone else. You need to change your life. Dedicate the rest of your life to following God. It's not all that hard. Being a Christian is not necessarily easy, but being a Christian is not necessarily hard either. Where the rub comes in to being a Christian, and what makes it extremely hard to do, is when we try to walk that fine line between the world and Christ. We're not committed totally to either one, and that makes life hard. Now, I didn't say if you totally commit to Christ that life won't get rough. I'm not about to tell you that. Think about this. When you're walking without Christ, your master is Satan. Why does he want to make things rough on you? When you decide to leave him and join Christ, then's when he decides he wants to make things rough on you, trying to get you to come back. So I didn't say it was going to be easy, but you can do it. These people did it. They made the choice, and look at the reward. You can too. If you're subject tonight to the invitation of the Lord, and we can be of assistance to you, Won't you let us know as we stand and sing the song that's been selected?